We wanted to get back to today's top story. The state of Michigan is halting use of the Johnson & Johnson one-dose COVID-19 vaccine. The FDA recommended this pause, and we know that 6 patients have experienced blood clots out of the nearly 7 million Americans who have received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine so far. How long will the state of Michigan's pause on Johnson & Johnson vaccines last? And how far-reaching will this pause be as public health officials struggle to get COVID under control? With us to talk about some of the decisions under discussion right now is Emily Martin, an associate professor of epidemiology at the University of Michigan. Hey, Emily, it's good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
We already knew that it was a pretty big deal for the FDA to approve emergency use of a vaccine. So how big a deal is it then to put the brakes on that same product?
Well, in essence, this is the system as it's intended to work. You know, these vaccines during this rollout, we're having really unprecedented levels of monitoring, both safety monitoring for big events like this, but then also monitoring for day-to-day side effects as people are getting vaccinated. And so, you know, as part of that kind of contract with the American public, this monitoring comes with the ability to stop and review when we see a safety event like this happen, to kind of evaluate what's behind it. Is this coincidence? Is this related to the vaccine? And that's what we're seeing happen right now.
If we look at these numbers, nearly 7 million people vaccinated with doses made by Johnson & Johnson, and out of those nearly 7 million, 6 cases of blood clots and 1 death. Do you see those as numbers that warrant a pause?
So it's exceedingly rare, as those numbers show. I think, you know, one of the reasons behind the pause, which I think is worth thinking about, is sometimes a pause gives an opportunity for, you know, as the FDA and the CDC learn more over the next couple of days, the guidance that they can issue to advise doctors and healthcare professionals and public health professionals in terms of what to watch for and how to handle a signal if we do see one of these rare events could save, these events from occurring in the future. And so sometimes these pauses are great from an educational reason while they review the safety. And I think there's value in that.
What do you expect that researchers will be trying to find out about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in the short term?
Usually what happens during this time period is they go deep into the data, all of the safety data they have on all of these different administrations, to see if there are other signals that might corroborate what they're seeing. They're also going to go deep into these specific cases and review laboratory data and medical data and look for any sort of connection that they might be able to draw a conclusion from. And so you're going to see this kind of sweep of abroad across all of the vaccinations, but then also this deep dive into the individual cases to try to figure out whether they're going to look to see if there's a biologic mechanism that can speak to what they're seeing. But then also, are there kind of other underlying safety signals in the data that they hadn't picked up yet that will shed any light on this?
Emily, I don't want to seem like I'm putting words in your mouth, but I think I'm hearing you say that the question at this point might not be, is this a safe product? But the question is, what signals might health professionals look for in people who receive the vaccine going forward? Am I reading that right?
That's right. Like, I think what we can expect to hear, and obviously, you know, there's more to learn and we don't want to get out ahead of the reviews as they're happening, but this is an exceedingly rare event. We know that already. And so, you know, what we can expect to hear is guidance around either adjustment of what to watch for when we're looking at adverse events, how to do it even more safely than we are already. And we also might see, you know, some of the things, strategies that we've seen in Europe and other places are kind of tweaking the guidance in terms of who gets what vaccine product to try to optimize things further. You know, I still am impressed by just the millions of people that have already received this vaccine safely.
Do you worry that this pause might have a ripple effect on the pace of vaccinations overall?
Absolutely. I think, just operationally, this is a really critical time to be vaccinating. And so any sort of pauses and switches in strategy that we're seeing, even this week, next week, I mean, here in Michigan, it's really important that we keep vaccinating as quickly as possible because we've got such high rates and such widespread COVID happening. In nationally, you can see there's going to be probably a ripple effect just operationally from doing this. But then, for communications, we're going to probably have a few weeks here where we're going to have to have that kind of careful scientific message about what we know, communicating the uncertainty, and then communicating what we learned from the review, and really getting that message out to the American public. And so you can imagine where that's going to be challenging for public health professionals.
Right. Do you think that there is a simple way to communicate that kind of risk? We've been talking and talking and talking about the risks of COVID for well over a year now. This conversation that we've been having about potential risks for people who do take vaccines, do you think there is a simple and effective way to communicate those relative risks to the public?
It's really hard, and my experience has been before COVID was working a lot with the influenza vaccine, which is a vaccine that doesn't have these like 70%, 90% effectiveness numbers. It's really much more variable from year to year. And what we started doing very frequently is focusing on what we called the averted burden, which is a little bit of a tongue twister, but really focusing on the number of lives that are being saved by the vaccine. And, that number is already climbing higher and higher, the number of deaths that we know that have been prevented to date by the vaccine. And so, that's an important message that we need to remember and not forget, that as we try to prevent these rare events and we take them seriously, we look at them. We also know that we're saving a lot of lives at the same time.
It seems like if there's a really unfortunate juxtaposition here, it's the fact that Michigan is going through such a serious surge in COVID infection rates right now, even as this question about the some of the warning signs for Johnson and Johnson vaccines are coming up at the exact same moment.
It's a huge challenge, because right now with the climbing rates, it's really important to vaccinate. And so it's really a challenge to have this hiccup and interruption. I mean, it's not the most common vaccine coming into the UN or into the US, but it is still a major piece of the pie. The other thing is, because this vaccine is one dose, it is really useful to use for people that might be really mobile and might not be someplace where they expect to get, be around 4 weeks later in the same spot to get the same dose. And so it's been a really go-to useful tool, especially as we're looking at younger segments of the population. So I hate to use that tool, or I hate to lose access to that tool. I'd like to continue to be able to use that. And so hopefully this review will help show that it's safe to keep doing so.
Emily Martin, epidemiologist with the University of Michigan. Emily, thanks.
Thank you.
And that's Stateside for today. Our show is produced by Aaron Allen, Mike Blank, April Van Buren, and by our director, Mercedes Mejia, with additional help from Catherine Newhan, Nell Ovitt, and Olive Scott. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Stateside's a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcast service of the University of Michigan. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.